All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Radio on the River as we go along, and we're going to also be talking, as you know, our monthly benefits program, and I actually do have our benefits person with us. And then, as I said, we're going to, after we get done talking with Carol Ann, we are going to be talking to members of the board of Veterans Radio America and a couple of our storytellers that have been out here. I'm really sorry that you missed the opportunity to come out and listen to their stories. It's been a great afternoon, a little damp, but we've been having fun, and we've learned a lot about people. You can hear clapping over in the underneath the tent. We're very lucky to have that available as well. Before we get really started, I want to make sure that we thank our sponsors. They've been very patient with us. And the number one is going to be Legal Help for Veterans. And Legal Help for Veterans is a disability specialized law firm helping veterans with their disability cases. For more information, you can go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com. NVBBC, the National Veterans Business Development Council, they are the leading organization for certifying veteran-owned businesses. If you are a veteran-owned business and you want to do business with the federal government and many corporations, you need to be certified as a veteran-owned business. So go to their website, that's nvbbc.com, for more information. We also want to thank the Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor. For more information about them, you can go to va.gov/Ann Arbor for more information about them. Also, we want to thank the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310 here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, American Legion Post 46 also here in Ann Arbor. We also want to thank our sponsors for today's fundraiser, and that is the Fisher House in Michigan and the Aero Strategy Corporation. So thank all of those people for their help and their continuing support. This day has been amazing to me just to get an opportunity to talk to these other veterans to help us raise funds for Veterans Radio. If you weren't able, the sun is out. Can you believe this now? If you would like to sponsor or help support Veterans Radio, all you got to do is go to the veteransradio.net and you can click on the banner for Radio on the River and make your donation there or just right through our website as well. Also, we have a lot of what they call swag hats, sweatshirts, and all kinds of really neat things that we've got available for you as a listener. All right, here we go, right into the program now. So joining me in my subterranean studio here underneath a leaking deck is from Legal Help for Veterans is Carol Ann Falzone. Carol Ann, welcome back to our program.
Oh, thank you, Dale. What a great day. And you're right, now the sun is coming out. But this was so awesome. I wish more individuals would have been able to partake today because the storytellers were spectacular. And congratulations to the first ever fundraiser. We'll have to do it again.
Well, we'll have to think about that. No, we will be doing it again, but not under this. All right. So anyway, I asked Carol Ann to join us on the program today. Oh, by the way, if you have a question that you'd like to have answered today, you can give us a call. The number is 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. All right. So Carol Ann is one of our disability specialists affiliated with Legal Help for Veterans. So what is it that we should know?
Well, I'm only going to go through a few major issues that have come up. And maybe next month, in October, we could really describe all of these issues. But I want to give you, to our audience, a couple major announcements. The VA Family Caregivers Benefit has now been extended to 2025. And that's benefits for the legacy. There was talk that they were going to do away with that program. And so I will say we could get more into detail next month. If you are concerned about it, I would ask you to give a call back to the VA Caregiver Support Coordinator, and that number is 855-260-3274. And their offices are open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., believe it or not. And I would really encourage you, and 8 to 5 on Saturdays, I would encourage you to call. That is the VA Caregivers Legacy Family Caregivers Program has been extended into 2025. The other thing that I really would like you to look into is if, once again, there's been a recall on the CPAP machines. I don't know if you heard about that, Dale, but there is a concern now on, I believe, the Philips mask. And so if you have any issues, if there's anything going on, please call back your sleep apnea clinic and ask if your machine is involved with any recalls. And I do know with the mask, they're giving you some alternative suggestions to help you out with that. Please, we could go over this extensively, or call our number, and we could get back with you with answers if you have some concerns.
Right. Okay. That's the big thing right there.
Yes.
The CPAP thing. Luckily, I don't do CPAP, but I know that that's an issue with many people out
yes.
there. You mentioned briefly when we were before we went on the air that that there were some updates on the PACT Act.
Well, there's been a significant one with the PACT Act being the biggest ever, the 2022 PACT Act, and we just got a ruling seen of a new what's been added to that is what is called secondary conditions. You know, all the cancers that were listed. And there is now where the veteran could go back if they've had related to that cancer during that period, radiation, surgery, chemotherapy, and have had side effects and some debilitating results from that. They could apply for that also into their claim. So we could talk more about that next month's benefits, but that is also huge. Go back to whoever's helping you with your claim, whether it's a VSO, Legal Help for Veterans, and we could help you with that to
okay.
more develop that.
Right. And the other thing is to make sure that you file your claim.
Absolutely, because this PACT Act is unbelievable with the new additions for burn pits, Agent Orange going back to include some radiation, and Camp Lejeune, huge developments recently.
So we want to make sure that all of those people who have a secondary claim or an initial claim, making sure you file a claim.
Yes.
The VA is making it so much easier for you right now. I mean, you could file it electronically
yes.
if you want to, or you can contact your VSOs or Legal Help or any of the other legal organizations
yes.
out there to help veterans.
But yeah. I would encourage you, don't do it by yourself. There's
no,
many, and we're experienced, and we know what we're doing.
Yeah. It's just way too confusing.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Carol Ann. Thank
okay.
you for just dropping by. And we're going to switch out our guests. And we have a lot of people out here hanging out now that the sun has come out. And I wanted to introduce you to one of our board members for the Veterans Radio America. And we are... Here, this is live radio, folks. This is really fun. All right. So joining me right now on the line is one of our board members, as I said, for Veterans Radio America, and that is Lydia Pinkham. And Lydia, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me, Dale.
I wanted to know how you got involved with us. Why did you agree to get involved with us?
Well, I met Kate Melcher through an SVA, the Student Veterans of America, University of Michigan chapter. We were doing a fundraiser, and Fisher House Michigan was our chosen charity that year, the chosen nonprofit that year. So I actually met Kate Melcher at a benefit dinner for Fisher House Michigan, became good friends with Kate, and after she joined the board, she reached out to me and said, we have this opportunity. We're trying to get a few new people on the board, increase our outreach, and here I am.
Well, for those of you who are not familiar with Veterans Radio, Lydia is our social media expert now. She is helping Tammy spread the word. This is why we're so excited to have Lydia available to us as we, you know, move into the future to see what happens with Veterans Radio. And Lydia was responsible for almost this raindrop is falling on my head. For putting this whole whole program together, and I just wanted to make sure that I got you on here. I wanted to thank you so much for all that you've done to help us.
Well, thank you. It definitely wasn't a solo job. Had a lot of help. So.
It did. Thanks, Lydia.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. All right. I'm going to take a little break right now and do our Medal of Honor, which I hope that Derek did receive. All right. So when Derek plays that, we're going to do our Medal of Honor series. We're going to come back and we're going to meet some of our storytellers that we had here today at Veterans Radio America's Radio on the River. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Warrant Frederick Ferguson led a four-ship helicopter formation into a South Vietnamese army compound under heavy fire. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
After completing a hitch on the Navy, Ferguson got his commercial pilot's license and then joined the Army to fly helicopters. 2 weeks after graduating from helicopter school, he was in Vietnam. On January 31, 1968, Ferguson heard that a 1st Cavalry helicopter had gone down in Hue and another had been badly shot up trying to rescue them. Ferguson and his crew agreed to go get them. While refueling, he asked 3 Huey gunships if they wanted to accompany him. They did. The GIs in the compound reported they were under heavy fire. Ferguson circled until the fire abated, then began a low-level high-speed run into the compound. He descended blindly in a dust storm from his rotors. When he touched down, he saw there was only 1 foot clearance on each side of his blades. The GIs jumped aboard and Ferguson pulled up. A mortar shell exploded under his aircraft, spinning it 180 degrees. One of the Hueys was shot down and the crew rescued. The other two were so badly shot up by the time they landed, they were no longer able to fly. Ferguson received his Medal of Honor from President Nixon on May 17, 1969.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Oh, and we are back here on Veterans Radio. And all kinds of sticking electronic noises and everything else going on around here today. I actually feel like I'm actually fine because I've got another rotor head with me today. So sitting across from me, my little control table here, is Tom Skempsey. You were a gunship pilot in Vietnam in 1968-69, correct?
Correct, Dale.
And Tom was one of our storytellers today, and so I'm going to kind of go back and just kind of ask you just a little bit about, I'll give my audience a little background to you, that you are from Michigan, and you ended up, you know, were you drafted, or did you go down and enlist and then kind of went from drafted to enlisted?
First of all, Dale, it's great to be here with you. You're one of my heroes, and thank you for your service, and thank you for getting the word out, sharing with fellow veterans that there's a life after the military, and we can certainly encourage one another, not only by sharing our experiences, but just in essentially supporting all of those that have been in the military, and it's an important aspect, I think, for veterans at large.
Well, I obviously I agree with you. Just the idea of us getting together and talking today has been really fun. You know, you find out that there are other veterans out there that you didn't know were veterans, first of all, because we don't have a big V on our forehead or anything along
right.
those lines. But you suddenly mention, you know, helicopters or Fort Walters or, you know, Savannah or Fort Rucker or anything like that, and suddenly, oh, I was there, and off you go into the wild beyond. We're not in the Air Force, but that's where it happens. Oh, Tom, tell me, you ended up being, as I said, a pilot, helicopter pilot as a lieutenant, correct?
I basically was a country bumpkin who came from a family of longstanding military servicemen. And I looked forward in a way to being in the military, although I was drafted, I really didn't know what I was getting into. But I received an encouragement from one of my uncles who was a hero of Battle of the Bulge, and it recommended that I take advantage of all the schools that the Army proposed or allowed, or if you had the opportunity to attend. And so I had that mind frame, and it just so happened at that time in my service, when I got in 66, Vietnam was building up. Of course, we all know that there was a need for aviators. And so besides enjoying the military, I had the distinction of winning the American Spirit Award during basic training at Fort Knox, which that meant that really the wonderful gift was that was the recipient of the American Spirit Award was awarded a four-year scholarship at West Point. It's another long story, but the short part of it is I didn't really want to go to West Point, and I decided I would receive my commission hopefully during Officer Kennedy School, which I did. To make the story short, right after Officer Kennedy School, I had the opportunity to go to Ranger School, become qualified, jump school, then Ranger School, then Jump Master School, and the Special Forces Officer course. And I was just really excited about wanting to have the best training. But then I had the invitation to attend flight school, Rotary Wing Flight School, which I did, and similar to other pilots, graduated in March of 68, and the same month I am flying in Pleiku, Vietnam, Southeast Asia, very unaware of the environment and so on. But we received great training, and we're so grateful for this training. And so just in a matter of months, I from a first lieutenant, I was promoted to a captain, became platoon leader, responsible for about 80 pilots and enlisted men. And one of the most amazing times of my life, as I look back at it now, I think personally, I simply reacted as a good citizen, as a good member of the armed forces. And when you do that, your attitude is right. It doesn't always work out. But for me, Vietnam was an adventure. Knowing now what I did before, would I like to be back? No way, not even one little bit. But I certainly have appreciated that time of my service and beyond, and particularly the camaraderie, the fellowship that you really experience in combat. And so it's good to be alive, Dale.
It is good to be alive. So what unit were you with?
I served with the 189th Assault Helicopter Company, which was part of the 1st Aviation Brigade. Everybody, of course, has an esprit de corps involved in their company. The 189th were called the Ghost Riders. I say this for the purpose of aviators who may be aware of that unit. But I ended up in the gunship platoon called the Avengers, sort of a dark name now that I see it, but nevertheless, that's the unit I ended up with, was the platoon leader of and did all my flying with. Essentially, I flew a UH-1C model gunship. And we carried 10 to 15,000 rounds of 7.62 and 14 rockets, and flew always in a pair.
Right.
And
I love gunships because they saved my rear end many, more than one time. It's kind of interesting when you said you were the 189th Ghost Riders. My company was the 195th, and our call sign was Sky Chiefs. But the 2nd Platoon, their call sign were the Ghost Riders as well.
Okay.
And so if you got here a little bit earlier, you would have heard me playing Johnny Cash's Ghost Riders.
Okay, that's a very familiar tune, and certainly invokes a lot of memories, particularly that last 30 days, 20 days, 10 days. Yeah, that song really
resonated with me.
Thank you.
And but Tom, also, you know, once you got out of the service, you went into the, you didn't go into the family business, but it sounds like you kind of created a branch of it.
I really wanted to consider staying in and to put my 20 in, but as I just made a decision, my wife and I, that we were not going to do that, and ended up going into the exact opposite of what you would find in Vietnam, and that is a peaceful landscape and those who installed it. So I ended up, we first of all had a flower shop. I was known as a flower child, which I really wasn't a flower child. I was in it because my mommy had a lot of nice flowers and people like flowers. And so don't say one word to me about flower child. I don't like it. Just kidding. But I had a very, my wife and I had a very reputable business in the area and, a flower business. And then I ended up becoming a certified landscape designer, which I did for 35 years under the name of Stemke Gardens in this area, very well respected. And now my son, Matthew, continues as proprietor. And life is good.
Really. Life is good. Life is good. And I appreciate you coming out here and talking with us today. And I'm hoping that, you know, maybe this is something that we can get together and do more often.
Dale, I want to say one more thing about life is good. The reason life is good is because we have this wonderful support unit of other brothers and sisters that serve, that understand who we are, and we're simple folk that need to be encouraged, or we're very proud of our service, and we're very aware of the need for all of us to honor and serve one another and to be good citizens.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Tom Kempsey.
Thank you.
All right. As we switch out our guests, we're going to want to remind everybody that they can go to veteransradio.net and make a donation to Veterans Radio. We greatly appreciate everyone who came out here today in the inclement weather, and it was really kind of an interesting experience, as they say. As Tom just pointed out, though, I wanted to, you know, we talk about the idea of when we were in the service that we protected each other and we had each other's backs. Well, we like to continue that now and make sure that we have your back now. We don't like the idea of homeless veterans at all. We want to make sure that veterans get the health care that they deserve and any benefits that they are entitled to. And that's one of the things that we do here on Veterans Radio. Well, if you do want to support Veterans Radio, please go to veteransradio.net and click on support. And the tax-deductible donation now, since we are a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. So I want to appreciate everybody who has donated for our Radio on the River. It's kind of a big adventure for us to try for the first time, and it looked out. I think we're going to make a profit, which is awesome. And so we're going to try this again later on in the year or next year, and learn what some of the things that we didn't do quite so well this time around. But anyway, joining me on the air right now is Brian Gowan. I want to make sure I pronounce your name correctly. Gone with the Wind. And I met Brian first through the Fisher House organization, again, through Kate Melcher. Everything seems to go through her, like right now these days. And Brian was one of our guests today as a storyteller, and unfortunately, I had to go and get myself all set up. So could you kind of give our audience a little background on your military career? Because I know it started off, you were talking about your dad at Iwo Jima.
Family. And my father served in World War II. He was in the Navy. He was actually like a 90-day wonder. You know, he was a teacher, had a deferment. They had a couple boys, and he realized, hey, someday I need to be able to look my sons in the eye and say I served because all these people have done this. And so he got his officer training at Princeton and then deployed to the Pacific. And he was at Okinawa and Iwo Jima. In fact, he was one of the guys landing the Marines on the beach. He was in the second wave at Iwo Jima.
Was he on a landing craft or LSD?
Now you're going to ask me hard questions.
I know. My dad was in the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
And he was on Iwo Jima as well.
Oh.
And he was on an LSD, and he went in, I guess, about, I don't know, like late that afternoon or the next day, and the front of the ship opened up and, everything came out of it.
Yeah, he was actually landing guys in the landing craft. He was on the ship that had the landing craft, and then he actually was one of the officers that took him into the beach.
Oh, my.
So, pretty powerful. In fact, my dad was a rugged man. He taught school for 40 years. The only time I ever saw him cry was right before he passed away. As many of the World War II vets never really talked about it until the end of life. He was telling a story about one of the Marines that he befriended on the journey and the way, and he had. Telling the guy, you need to get your guys off this as soon as we can. When that gate comes down, you go. I mean, he said it probably a little more profanely than that.
More colorful.
And he said, I'll be the first one off. And he was. He made about two steps. My dad told that story. And then he was very proud. I went to the Naval Academy, but he never wanted me to be a Marine. And I respect that.
So, what did you do in the service? What was your job there when you were in the Navy?
So I was graduated from the Naval Academy in 1982. I grew up in Niles in the west side of the state. Did 4 years at the Naval Academy, and then I went to flight school, and I got to fly F-14. So if you ever saw the movie Top Gun,
I was Goose. Huh?
I was Goose, only I lived.
Oh, you were in the backseat?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So I got commissioned in 1982, and I was able to fly most of my career. I was in my first tour. I was on the USS America and a fighter squadron 102, the Diamondbacks, and then I was on the wing staff and a flight instructor after that tour. And then my next fleet tour was with VF-11 Red Rippers on the Forrestal, and then I did an instructor tour again, and then I was in the VF-32 Swordsman and flying off the Eisenhower.
Right.
And then I did went to the War College, got my master's in Naval War College, and then I did a joint tour overseas at a NATO headquarters in Norway for 2 years and came back, and then I was the XO and commanding officer of Fighter Squadron 41 during 9/11, flying off the USS Enterprise.
Right, I understood that you were called up like for 9/11.
Yeah, we had just finished doing fly zone operations. We were on deployment. This was about 5 months into deployment. We had trained we knew we were going to be flying over the no fly zone over Iraq, and we had actually done some combat missions as late as summer 2001 in Iraq. People don't realize for 10 years we were patrolling a no-fly zone over Iraq because they would either shoot missiles or they'd attack the Kurds or whatever. And so we were there to continue the two-decade mission of protecting that area. And in fact, they had been shooting at the no-fly zone things. And if they did that at that time, the policy was we would do a retaliatory strike and try and take out the SAM. So we had done several of those. On September 9th, we were on our way home. We had finished up. We'd spent all summer in the Gulf. It was incredibly hot.
Right.
We were all excited because we were on our way home. The ship was going to sail, around the south coast of Africa, maybe do a port call in Brazil and Cape Town, and then go home, and we'd be heroes. And September 10th was we pulled out, and then after the last strike, September 11th was a holiday routine. You know, everybody kind of a take your break. We've been working so hard for the last month and a half, and walked into our squadron ready room, and, you know, they're 6 hours ahead there, and we all slept in because we'd been up in night strikes before and doing everything, and TV was on, and I walked into the ready room, and my duty officer said, "Hey, Skipper, an airplane just hit the World Trade Center." And that was it. Our carrier CO turned the ship around. We were off the Horn of Africa, and we were the first aircraft carrier on station. Our relief had just gotten there. They came out of the Gulf, and then they sailed the Kitty Hawk up. So there were three aircraft carriers. The Kitty Hawk had special operations aircraft on there, and then the two other carriers had normal naval air wings, and we just got ready for the first strikes in October.
I just find all this stuff. This is why we do this program, folks, because you run into people that have had experiences that most of us weren't aware of at all. And we get to find out about these things that we don't read about in newspapers, obviously, because, you know, they're not going to tell us any of this stuff that's going on. But I just want to thank you, Brian, very much for being here and for supporting Veterans Radio America and being one of our storytellers. And I need to talk to you again.
Well, it's a privilege to be here. You know, I was in town because I work for the Fisher House Foundation, and we just dedicated the Fisher House at the VA in Ann Arbor.
Right.
A great privilege, and we're really looking forward to being able to, we're working with the VA, the John Dingell VA in Detroit. And our goal is in the next year, hopefully, to break ground on a Fisher House there as well. So we'll have that will be the second Fisher House in Michigan.
That's awesome. Thank you very much.
My privilege.
Thank you. All right. While we switch out again, we are here live on Veterans Radio, and we are talking to some of our speakers that were on here for our fundraiser on Veterans Radio America. And there we go. Those of you that know me know that I don't remember names really well. And so I was just asking William to turn his name tag around so I can make sure I don't screw it up. But anyhow, so we appreciate all of you that have supported Veterans Radio in the past, and we're hoping that you'll support us in the future. We've been doing this for 19 years. Probably the proudest thing, the best thing I've ever done as far as public service is concerned, I think, with Veterans Radio, is we've got to tell over 900 stories. We've got over 500 podcasts out there now. If you want any more information about Veterans Radio or Veterans Radio America, just go to veteransradio.net, and you'll be able to find everything. It's a pretty user-friendly website, and we're excited to attract more and more listeners. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for more and more listeners, and we're looking for more and more stories. So if you have some stories that you think that we should cover here on Veterans Radio, just click on the contact button and send me an email, and I will get back to you, I promise. Just don't send us a whole bunch of emails wanting to redevelop our website. That's what I've been getting a lot recently. And we're pretty pleased with what we've got for those of you that are out there listening. And send us your story ideas, and we'll try to incorporate them into our programming or into our podcast as we continue on into the future. I really don't like saying going forward. So, right, joining me right now is a little bit younger veteran, and this is William Kirkstra. And Bill is you go by Bill or William?
Will.
Will? Okay. And he is another Marine. And so we're going to find out a little bit about more about William. So, William, tell me a little bit about you. Where are you from, and how did you get into the Marines?
Dale, I'm from Charlevoix, Michigan, originally. Graduated from Whitehall, Michigan. I joined the Marines shortly after 9/11. Took a couple years to graduate, but I was ready to fight. The Marine Corps just seemed to be the branch. I think stepped foot in the recruiter office, and he said, "Well, maybe you can be a Marine if you're good enough." I said, "I'm good enough," and so I had to prove it to him. And
it was just the uniform, I know.
No, I joined, like I said, 2003. Wanted to go over and do that patriotic duty that so many had already been doing, but felt a sense of responsibility and wanted to carry on that mission.
So, When you were in the Marines, what was your occupation, your MOS?
Originally, I was a 2087. I was a radar technician for artillery, but I wasn't a very good one. So I ended up...
What does that mean? You didn't hit your targets or what?
No. I just... I ended up going a different avenue and then became an 0531, which is a civil affairs non-commissioned officer. So we would do different programs, COIN, counterinsurgency operations, things of that nature.
So you were part of the program sort of to win the hearts and minds of wherever you were?
Correct. There was a big push for that, and especially Iraq and Afghanistan, but I was mainly involved in Afghanistan in 2010.
Okay, and what were your duties there?
The duties in 2010, we essentially deployed. We trained as a detachment for civil affairs. It was actually modeled after the combined action platoons in Vietnam. So, you know, you were kind of embedded with the locals, getting to know them, figuring out what sort of things that had affected them negatively or positively, and trying to really just kind of get the locals to not be scared of you, which was, you know, not always an easy task during those times. As a detachment, we trained together but got split up, and it was a little lonely. Civil affairs and, they kind of scatter us to the winds. And you get attached to the infantry units and go out, do your patrols. After any sort of battle damage or, loss of life, you would meet with the village locals and kind of discuss reparations, if you will, what those things were valued at, what you could pay somebody for, and that was all done with U.S. taxpayer dollars. We called it the SERP fund, but it was the Commander's Emergency Response Fund. And that was just to, essentially things to, kind of soothe the local populace. You were also looked at as a passive intelligence gathering. So you kind of got what we called, you were looking for what we called as atmospherics. So, are the locals really mad? Are they sort of mad? Are they being friendly? And you would report that back to your command and kind of see, whether or not you were having progress in the area of operations or not. A couple of different things, but all essentially, higher level stuff, sort of the strategic campaign. You were kind of the tactical level of that. So.
You were telling a story earlier that I found rather humorous, actually, is that before you went to Afghanistan, you went through a language school quickly on
Pashto. It's a local Helmand province. It's a very unique language to Helmand in Afghanistan. It's similar to Spanish and how you conjugate the verbs. But the Marine Corps felt, nice enough to send me to San Diego State University for 3 months to do a crash course or an immersion course of Pashto. So those classes were about 8 hours a day for 3 months straight. So you get your money's worth. I picked it up very well. Could speak elementary Pashto, but they had made me a pay agent and given me all this money in country. The kids used to follow me around and call me a paisa saray, which in Pashto means money man. So you can understand. When you're on a foot patrol and you're trying to be as inconspicuous as possible, and all the kids are following you around and calling you money man, it's a little unnerving. So.
Yeah, but what you were carrying around some big significant cash in your knapsack, weren't you?
Typically about $100,000, but it was all in Afghani, so it was in their local currency.
Oh, okay. I thought you were carrying around Benjamins or something.
No, it wasn't. No, it's still the same value, I think the exchange rate was 50-1 at the time. So
giving them a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, so it was a very large backpack full of cash, and the money's kind of funny. We called it funny money or monopoly money, but it's a little different than ours. But after counting it all day, your fingertips would be red or blue depending on whether or not, what denomination you're working with. And so you'd usually have, you kind of lick your fingers to count the bills, and you'd have red and blue on your face. And it was a trip. It was an interesting experience, spending U.S. taxpayer dollars. I didn't realize that I had been spending taxpayer dollars. As a young guy, I didn't really know, the impact of that. I started reading some different books, which we can talk about some other time, but I just really... It really kind of hit home that I was spending this taxpayer money. And the original, the initial project that I would do was building bridges to nowhere, and kind of we would look at spending this money as a measure of effectiveness. If we could spend more money, we could get, you know, that town of Marja, which we got, you know, deployed to, we could get them up and going and get their local infrastructure back in order. What ended up happening towards the end was, you know, understanding and kind of having this guilt or this burden of spending taxpayer money abroad. I stopped building what I called these bridges to nowhere and started building freshwater wells, as many as I could for the locals, because I'd seen children, you know, walking for, you know, a half a mile or a mile with these pails of water because there wasn't enough freshwater wells. And so I kind of thought to myself, I'm going to spend taxpayer money on something overseas. It might as well be freshwater.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome, man. We did similar things in Vietnam. I mean, I know I didn't personally, but there were units, as you mentioned, that would go out to villages, and they went out and did medical care. They did, you know, they built schools. They, you know, the CBs would go out and build stuff for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so on and so forth. And the idea of because you're trying to show that you're good guys, even though, you know, even though sometimes you got to blow up stuff nearby, that, you know, that you're really a good, we're good people, and that we would really like to help them out as much as we can if they let us. And also, as you mentioned, you know, kind of on the side, any information that you might be able to pick up that says, you know, bad guys, well, you know, you just built this whole new well for us or school or whatever it is. There are some bad guys over that hill.
Yeah, exactly.
You might want to think about
that was the kind of the intent of the coin operations, was to do that. But you know, I can empathize with the locals over there. You know, like I was saying earlier today, you know, it's a little unnerving to have you know, a foreign power in your country, and a lot of the locals, what I found, were, you know, they were just looking out for their wives and children. You know, typically is the word that I would get back. And you know, that ruffled some feathers on some reports that I would have to send back, you know, and fire up the chain of command. It's just that, you know, they just really don't, you don't want to talk to us right now.
Yeah, I can't imagine why. You know, I'm always amazing people don't understand that, because most people just want the same thing. They just want, you know, a roof over their head, safety for their kids, education, food, and so forth.
I think the basics are what everybody typically wants. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I was very arrogant when I was talking with one of the village elders, and I said, you know, you're a young guy, and, you know, I'm a Marine, so I'm, you know, cocky by nature. But I had this backpack full of cash and said, you know, I can build you anything. What can I get you? And he said, you know, just leave. You're scaring my wife and kids. And that was really kind of a pivotal moment for me, you know, coming through the ranks and understanding, you know, what I value. And you know, obviously I'm married now, and a father with two sons, so it resonates a little differently now. I can put myself in that man's shoes, and you know, it was an interesting experience, very life changing.
Anytime you go into a combat zone, it's a life changing event. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're on the front lines or in the rear echelon.
Now, the stories we heard earlier were amazing.
Yeah, and you know, you still have that opportunity of never knowing where that next rocket's going to come from. One of the stories I think that our friend Horace Frazier told, you know, is it doesn't make any difference. You know, you can run when there's mortars coming around, or you can walk. Either one. You just never know exactly where they're going to land. So,
yeah, absolutely. No, there's danger and everything. You know, I'm happy to be home safe. Obviously, I've been out for some time, but it's nice to really appreciate what you all are doing at Veterans Radio. I think that, you know, as I'm getting older, I realize these stories are to be cherished, and that the veterans community is a, you know, that's home for me now.
Well, I appreciate it very much. Well, and hopefully, you know, we can partner up on some other things as we go along and tell more stories and get your generation more involved. You know, the World War II, unfortunately, those veterans were pretty much almost gone now. And luckily, I was so happy to see Guy Stern the other day. I didn't realize he was 100 years old. For those of you that listen to Veterans Radio, Guy's been on our program a couple of times. He was a Richie boy. And what a Richie boy did was, they were American Jews who were recruited into the army to go over to Germany to convince the Germans not to do what they're doing and to interrogate German POWs. The guy's amazing.
That's pretty powerful stuff. Yeah. I think you touched on something really important, if you don't mind, but if I had the opportunity to and I'm thankful for having talked to as many World War II veterans as I have. But like you said, a lot of them are they're leaving us. And so I'm looking at these Vietnam veterans now, and I'm just, every time I see a Vietnam veteran in the store, I have to shake their hand and say thank you for your service. And if I get an opportunity to talk to him, because I wish I would have done more to capture some more of the stories of the World War II veterans and the Vietnam veterans that we have, you know, they're to be cherished and to listen to as well. And I hope we can, make sure that we capture those stories.
We want to capture those stories and also want to capture your generation's stories because they're different.
Yeah.
And, as much as we have a lot of things in common, wars are different, technology is different. Everything is different.
You're not lying.
No, and you guys deployed 1,000 times. We only deployed once. So, and I got out when they tried to send me back.
Well, it wasn't all bad. The brothers and sisters, we do a good job of taking care of each other. The student veterans organizations across the country, college students, going to different places. We're a tight group. When we call each other and we need help, whatever it may be, mental health help, just some camaraderie to share things. They pick up the phone. That's very nice.
Yeah, I think it's great. Thank you, Will, for being on our program today.
You,
it's nice meeting you, and hope to see you again soon.
I'm sure you will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, you got 3 minutes to go, and so I'm looking around the room here. Kate, come on over for a second, and just throw the headset on there. We'll see what we can do. All right, so joining me right now is another one of our organizers, and we've got Kate and Kat Melcher here. Kat's a dog. It's her service dog. Okay. Kate, thank you. Thank you so much for everything that you and Lydia and everybody else has done to put this whole thing together. I can't tell you how I feel.
It's an absolute privilege. Obviously, every time being on the radio with you is wonderful, but there was something really special today, and this whole weekend I felt a community that is warm and tight, and it keeps growing. The four featured storytellers that we had today, I hadn't heard their stories before, and to hear.
And I knew two of them.
Right. I've known Mr. Stemke my entire life. We went to church together at St. Andrews in Saline, and I never even knew he was a veteran until very recently, and it turns out he's a Silver Star recipient, and his stories are incredible, and Major General Henderson, oh my word, to be a black man in the service, in the Marine Corps, going to the South for the first time in the middle of Jim Crow laws.
Yeah.
For him to fly into an airbase and take his helmet off and see the shocked look on everyone's face, that black man flew that airplane.
Yeah, how can he be doing that?
These stories were incredible. And the community that was here to listen to those stories in person, you could feel the warmth, you could feel the support. Veterans taking care of veterans, it looks a whole lot bigger now. It's the spouses and the parents and the children. They're all showing up because they want to support what you do here at Veterans Radio and beyond.
Well, I thank you for those kind words. And again, thank you so much for helping us put this whole thing together. And we didn't even have any thunder and lightning, but we've had a pretty exciting time out here on Veterans Radio. We got a minute to go. So I'm going to say thank you, Kate, very much. Thank you to Kat.
Our pleasure.
Thank you to Lydia. Especially thank you to Dr. Eric Stretz for letting us use his Huron River Yacht Club for our very first fundraiser for Veterans Radio America. We want to thank all of you for tuning in. And please, go to veteransradio.net. If you believe in what we're doing, if you want to support us, please make your donation there. And we'll be back next week. Live. I'm not sure what the topic's going to be, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be interesting. So until then, this is Dale Thronberry for Veterans Radio, and you are dismissed.